Hey everyone, welcome again to the Pipeline Podcast. Tim McMaster here, along with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline. They're both in Virginia at the Rookie Career Development Program. We're going to get into that a little bit. We'll also talk about the candidates to be number one in the new Top 100 Prospects list, which will be coming out later this month. And then we'll get into some other stuff as well surrounding that Top 100 list. But let's start with where you guys are at on location down outside D.C. Neither of you are in the snow that I'm suffering through here in New York City. So that is good news for you. But let's just sum this up. I know we talk about it every year here on the podcast, the RCDP, because I don't think a lot of people know that it even happens or what it's all about. So Jonathan, I'll let you kind of lay the groundwork a little bit about what the Rookie Career Development Program is.
Sure. It's a great program, a joint effort between Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association. And the general idea is to help players who are on the brink of establishing themselves in the big leagues deal with being in the big leagues. So much of the focus for professional players is between the lines, learning their craft. And this program, it was developed to try to help them avoid the stumbling blocks that sometimes players run into. So it'll be media training. They'll have sessions on financial planning, on how to deal with difficult situations in the clubhouse with veterans when they first get up. So all the things that could potentially trip a young player up along the way, but the idea being that they want these players to make it or not make it solely based on their ability to perform on the field and not hit any obstacles, especially if they're obstacles that they could have avoided easily, and this program helps them avoid those.
So the players all send, or the teams each send a handful, 3-4 players each from their organization, usually guys that are getting pretty close to the big league level where this stuff is going to be a bigger factor for them in the near future. Some of these guys actually made their major league debuts in 2017. Jim, I attended one of these a few years ago, and what stood out to me, because you kind of go into it expecting to see something, which is meetings and talking and players maybe drifting off. It's not like that at all. I was impressed with the amount of humor that's incorporated into it and the way that Major League Baseball actually makes this into what could be a dreadfully boring weekend. They make it into a really fun weekend for these players.
No, you're exactly right. And I mean, we talk to the guys every year about their impressions, and guys know what it is, but I don't think they necessarily know what to expect when they get here. And it would make for a long weekend if you arrive on a Thursday afternoon, and when you leave Sunday, all you're doing is sitting in these dull meetings for long periods of time and not interacting. There's a lot of interaction. They have skits, as you mentioned. They have comedy, to try to keep things light at times, although there is a serious nature to it. I think the thing that strikes me just about every year is there's a number of former players here. I haven't looked at the agenda in great detail yet, but I assume Dave Winfield is almost always here. And you'll see guys in their spare time. There'll be like a group of five or six guys sitting around Dave Winfield picking his brain. They do a great job of making fun. They usually take a trip to D.C. and see the Capitol or some other sites. And, it's not just, okay, it's a 2.5-day conference and you're going to be sitting in a boring meeting room listening to people talk and talk and talk and not do anything. They keep it very interesting. And look, I mean, the players probably wouldn't say so otherwise, but I do believe they're sincere. And all the years I've covered this, and I think that you've covered it, Jonathan, when you ask people, nobody's ever said, oh, boy, this weekend, I didn't really enjoy it. I mean, everybody usually has a pretty good time, and they usually wind up, I think, learning more than they expected to about, the various aspects of Major League life that they may not have considered. And, Tim, you mentioned that there's a number of guys who may have had a cup of coffee or been in the big leagues briefly. I mean, we almost always hear from those guys that they wish they had attended this before they got to the big leagues. It would have made their acclimation a lot easier. So it's a really nice job done by MLB and the Players Association, and they work as partners in this. And I think it's a really positive experience for everybody. And And we have yet to have a Chris Carter viral moment where somebody tells players they need a fall guy like they did at the NFL equivalent. It's a really, really good program.
And it is.
Come on, you guys were supposed to laugh at that. Come on. Well, there you go. Both on cue.
There you go. I was mentioning the top 100 list that's obviously going to be coming out later in the month. A number of guys that are going to be on that list are at this RCDP as well. Lots of talented guys, some that you mentioned making their debut. But when you look at the full list of players, Jonathan, you guys actually get some one-on-one time with these guys that serves two points. For one, you get to interview them and we get some content for MLB.com. On the other side of it, it actually gives these players some extra training as far as doing interviews, because depending on where they played minor league baseball, they may have done more or less of that sort of thing. So when you look at the list, Jonathan, who's a guy that stands out to you that you're really excited to get some one-on-one time with talking to on camera?
Yeah, it's been interesting. And you know, Jim and I think we comment to each other every year. It seems that each year guys are more and more polished overall. That doesn't mean that they can't use the experience, and we try to piggyback off the media training that they do and tell them, hey, this is a great way for you to sort of practice in a very low-key setting. And there are a lot of like top-notch prospects who are going to be here, Ronald Acuna, Victor Robles, guys like that. And then there are going to be guys who are going to be like really, really good interviews. Joe Jimenez from the Tigers is one. But the guy that I think I'm looking forward to catching up with again is Luis Urias of the Padres. I got to talk with him in the Arizona Fall League, interviewed him there. Just tremendous personality and can really flat out hit. Now, that doesn't come into play here, but I think he's a guy who's going to impact that young Padres lineup in the very near future. It's just a really advanced bat. But he's one of these guys that has a little twinkle in his eye, and I like guys like that. So I'm looking forward to sitting down with him. We ask him some serious questions about the upcoming season, what to expect, and then we try to have some fun with them and ask some more kind of featurey, cut four-ish type questions as well. So I think he'll do well with that.
Jim, how about you?
Yeah, it's nice. You get to see guys that you've talked to in the Arizona Fall League, or the College World Series, or spring training. I was looking over the list. A number of these guys I've talked to over the years. I guess, one guy who just jumps out, I'll be curious to talk to Willie Calhoun. A lot has changed for him in the last year. He made his big league debut. He changed organizations from the Dodgers to the Rangers in the Yu Darvish trade. The Dodgers were hoping to maybe make him a second baseman, where the Rangers almost immediately moved him and played him almost exclusively in left field. So a lot going on with Willie Calhoun since I last ran into him at the AAA All-Star Game in Tacoma last summer. So he's one of the many guys I'm interested in catching up with.
All right. Well, we are going to get into the top 100 list and who could be the number one overall prospect when it comes out in a few weeks. But before we get on to that, we want to take a second to tell you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive front office decisions in the modern game. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. And a recent episode discussed StatCast implications for the big free agents still left on the market. That would be most of them, including the best team fits for Lorenzo Cain and Eric Hosmer. To hear all that, download the show from Apple Podcast or wherever else you get your podcast by searching for StatCast Podcast or by going to www.statcastpodcast.com. All right, well, the top 100 list number one ranking, the debate got an extra infusion of excitement, I think, guys, when Shohei Ohtani officially came over and joined the Los Angeles Angels organization. So he's one of your candidates, but I want to go through kind of a few guys that are in that mix for number one as we kind of build up the drama, because before we get into it, this has not been decided yet. We're not doing this and saying that that for a fact this guy's going to be number one. You guys have still yet to do your final debates on the topic. So we don't know for sure who will be number one, but we'll talk about the guys who are in the mix. One of them, Shohei Ohtani, and he's the guy that is a little different than the other ones, Jonathan, because obviously he's coming over from Japan.
Yeah, and he's just a different animal altogether. I think if he were, just a pitcher or just a position player, I mean, it would be exciting anyway. He might be the number one prospect, as just a pitcher. When you add the fact that he does both and he does both extremely well, it almost makes it impossible to really rank him because he's in a whole different thing. I mean, how do you rank a guy who does two things so well against a guy who does one thing extremely well? It makes it really, really interesting. And, you know, with the caveat that he's not played a professional inning of Major League Baseball or anywhere, you know, over here. So then you get into whole discussions, debates over how does baseball in Japan measure up to baseball here? What does that mean in terms of trying to rank him on a prospect list? What's fair to expect of him? I think we in the pipeline ranks try not to be ones who get caught up too much in hype. But personally, I am as excited as anyone else to see what this guy actually does. And until we get to that point, it's a lot of guesswork, but similar to a guy coming out of college in the draft, I guess, and he's played at a more advanced level, but I mean in terms of the unknown. But it is an unknown that we are all very excited to see how it unfolds from here.
Before the top 100 list comes out, you guys are actually going to do top 10s per position like you do every year. And that's kind of one of the fascinating things, I think, Jim, about this guy is that there's a right-handed pitcher list, there's a top 10 outfielder list, and he's going to be on both of them.
No, you're right. I mean, I think, again, we haven't settled the list. I would be extremely surprised if he's not number one on our right-handed pitcher list, and it would be number one on the pitcher list. I mean, I do think the majority of teams like him more as a pitcher, but they also like him a lot as a hitter too. But, you know, if he was just a pitcher alone, I think he'd still be in contention to be the number one prospect in all of baseball. But then you throw in, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the hitting side of things, I think, is a little bit more uncertain. I mean, the tools are extremely exciting. I mean, the raw power is top of the scale. The arm strength is top of the scale. The pure speed, you know, home to first is well above average. Now, you know, the question will be, how will that stuff play? You know, he's not a base stealer. The speed doesn't play like that on the bases. There's a little bit of a, you know, he gets out of the box pretty good, so I think it makes those times play up. And he swung and missed a lot, you know, relative for a Japanese player. And people obviously swing and miss more over here. It's a little different style of game. So, you know, are strikeouts going to be an issue? You know, we'll have to see. But all that said, you know, if you're grading them on the tools and trying to, you know, factor in, you know, whatever you make of the performance in Japan, like Jonathan said, it's certainly above college baseball. You know, to me, Japanese baseball is probably somewhere between AAA and the majors. So you give him a lot of credit for having success over there. I mean, he's got to be right near the top of the outfield list too. I mean, in terms of outfielders, I would take Ronald Acuna over him, and I would take Eloy Jimenez and Victor Robles over him. But I mean, at worst, I think Otani's the fourth best outfield prospect in baseball. And then when you combine the two, it's a pretty exciting package. And I mean, we really haven't seen a guy try to do both on a regular basis. We've seen, you know, bench guys like Brooks Kieschnick and Christian Bethencourt try to do it as a way to hang on to a job at the end of a roster where they pinch hit and release pitch. But we haven't seen somebody try to pitch in rotation. And, you know, the plan now is that Otani will get, you know, regular at-bats at DH. We haven't ever seen anybody really do that at the big league level. And so, like Jonathan, I'm very much looking forward to seeing, you know, what he does in 2018 with the Angels.
All right, another guy that can be discussed as far as number one, and if you take Otani out of it, would have been even more probably a push for that number one spot as a guy that has skyrocketed it in the last year as far as how much people know about him, all of that. And he is there with you guys this weekend in Virginia, and that is Acuna, who you mentioned, Jim. And he's a guy that just does it all on – he obviously doesn't pitch, so he doesn't do it all like Otani. But otherwise, when you talk about all the other tools, he checks all those boxes, doesn't he?
You're exactly right with Acuna. I mean, I think of the guys who were in the minor leagues last season, he's got, you know, more five-tool potential than anybody. I mean, he was only 19. He got to AAA. He led the minors in hits. He was one of two minor leaguers with 20 homers and 40 steals. He went to the Arizona Fall League, and we've seen any number of guys who are top prospects who get to the fall league and maybe they're tired, or, you know, I could think of at least a couple cases where guys didn't really want to be there and they don't perform. Well, Acuna went to the fall league and he performed. I mean, he was the best player in the league. He was the MVP.
He led the league in homers and a number of other categories. He helped the team win the championship. He looks spectacular. You know, that's the performance component, you know, the tool standpoint. I mean, you're talking about well above average power, at least plus speed. He has a chance to be a solid center fielder. He can throw, so he can move to corner if he needs to. I mean, I think the only, you know, nitpick with him is you'd like to see him, you know, tighten his control of the strike zone a little bit. But again, this guy was 19 years old last year. So, you know, there's really nothing not to be excited about with Ronald Acuña.
And, Jonathan, when you talk about Acuña, we're going to see him soon, too, aren't we?
I would think so. You know, maybe not right out of the gate. You know, give him a little more time in AAA while he started his service clock. And he hasn't played that much in AAA, although he was very, very good there. But, you know, I would sort of probably give him a nice long look in big league camp, send him down to AAA, and just tell him, take care of business, and you'll be up here by June. And I think that's probably what he's going to force their hand in some way, shape, or form. You know, they've moved to a youth movement, obviously, and he is a big part of it. And he accelerated the timetable last year, and they kept, you know, letting his play dictate when he moved. So I think they're going to do the same thing. So I think that, you know, that's why this program, you know, the rookie career development program will be really good for him, to give him a sense of what to expect. There will be a lot of attention on him once he gets there as kind of the next big name to make it up among their prospects. And he really can do everything well and effortlessly. I mean, that was a really thing that kind of I took away from his time in the fall league, is that none of it looked difficult to him. He wasn't pressing. He wasn't like grinding it out because he was tired. He was just out playing baseball, and it just comes so easy to him. And I'm sure he'll hit some stumbling blocks, but boy, just the natural talent alone is going to help him push past those.
All right. If there's another guy, maybe Vlad Guerrero Jr., is he a guy who's going to get any talk from you guys about that number one overall spot? I'm trying to think of another guy who has an argument. Jonathan?
I think he's the only one, and I feel badly because Jim is like our Vlad Guerrero Jr. beat writer.
He'll get his chance.
But just from the pure hitting standpoint, you know, he might be the best all-around hitter in the minor leagues. When you combine, you know, the ability to hit and the power, it's going to be ridiculous. And regardless of where he plays defensively, I don't think it's going to matter. I think the bat is so special that he hits his way into this conversation. You know, if we're going to go with the assumption that Otani finishes number one, then there will be some discussion, I'm sure, about, you know, the next few, or certainly number two and three with Acuña and Vlad Jr.
Go ahead, Jim.
No, I mean, I was going to agree with everything Jonathan said there. I mean, I think those are the three guys you're talking about. In my mind, if you're talking about pure offensive production, I'd go with Vlad Guerrero Jr. I think, you know, comparing him to Acuña and Otani just as a hitter, I think he's a better hitter than those guys. And I think he might actually have, I mean, they're all going to have big power, but I think he might actually have the best power of any of them when all is said and done. But, you know, the other part of the equation is, I mean, he's not a very good third baseman. He's probably going to wind up at left field or first base. I mean, with Vlad Jr., you're pretty much getting what he does at the plate. I mean, I think that the comparison you've heard on him since he signed, and I think it's apt, is Miguel Cabrera. I mean, I really think he could be the next Miguel Cabrera, whereas Otani, obviously, you have the two-way aspect, and Acuña has a chance to be a legitimate five-tool center fielder. So it's a fun argument. You know, I talking about anticipating what guys are going to do next year, not just Otani, but, you know, what can Acuña do to build on what he did as a teenager? And, you know, we'll see him in the big league at some point at age 20 this year. And then with Vlad Guerrero Jr., I wouldn't put him in the big leagues at 19, and certainly not an opening day. But if you told me he just continued to rake and forced his way to the big leagues, I wouldn't be shocked, because I think this guy's going to be an absolute beast.
And there's a need there in Toronto. They could certainly use another outfielder in the corner spot or something like that. So there's a fit if he does continue to rake. What about Gleyber Torres? He was a guy who was right there in that discussion at number one before the injury. He obviously hasn't proven he's back. But if we knew he was 100% and healthy, is there any debate there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think you could certainly make an argument, especially if you think he stays at shortstop, which he could. He also would be very good at second. He's shown he can play third. He can really, really hit. So all those things, I think, yeah, and he hasn't done anything wrong. We try not to, ding a guy too much for an injury, especially since it's not his throwing arm. It's not going to affect his throwing from shortstop, for instance. We'll have to see, how long it takes him to get his rhythm back at the plate. But assuming that he comes back, he's not knocked out of that sort of conversation in the top spot because of anything he did. It's more because while he wasn't playing, Acuna and Guerrero took big steps forward, especially Acuna, who started in A and shot all the way up to AAA. So it's more that guys passed him while he was standing still than anything that he did negatively.
All right, one more thing I want to get from you guys is a thought on a guy each who is not in the current top 100 prospects, but who will be in the new one that's going to be coming out later in the month. We don't know where these players would necessarily land, but a guy that you're excited about here going into 2018 that's going to make that leap for the first time into the top 100. Jim, you can go first.
Well, I want to pick multiple players, but I'll limit myself to just one. I just with the Arizona Fall League fresh in my mind, I'd say Monte Harrison of the Brewers. This is a guy who was the best athlete in the entire 2014 draft, could have played college football. He was, anybody who wants to go on YouTube, you can see videos of him throwing down some monster dunks on the basketball court, too, as a Missouri high school product. And he was just hurt in his first two full seasons. He had an ankle injury in 2015. He broke a hammy in 2016 and really wasn't healthy until this year when he had a 2020 season in the minors. And the thing that struck me, and he looked great, too, in the fall league. And he was on the taxi squad. So he only played twice a week. And if he'd been in the regular lineup, he probably would have led the league in homers, not Acuna, because he hit five homers and finished second in the league, even though he only played a handful of games. And the thing that struck me is, talking to a lot of the professional scouts who work the Arizona Fall League, who aren't necessarily guys who had history with Harrison as an amateur, because a lot of times the amateur scouts are different than the professional scouts. And, I just remember talking to guys. It seemed like almost every time or every other time I would talk to one of those guys out there, and we'd talk about whichever player was at the game we were at or somebody in particular. And it didn't take very long before it seemed like the majority of those guys would say, "What do you have on this Monte Harrison guy? He's unbelievable." And they didn't realize that, he was a top draft guy who just kind of, and was fallen by the wayside strong, but I guess just, kind of receded into anonymity for a couple of years because he'd been hurt. I mean, his tools were unbelievable. He's a big, tall, super athletic corner outfielder. And that guy could be a 30-30 guy at the big league level. So, I think Monte Harrison jumps out to me. Again, we haven't really finalized the list. I'm still fine-tuning mine so we can kind of combine them and start sorting it out. I'm not sure where he'll work his way onto my list, but I know he'll definitely be somewhere in the middle of my top 100.
How about you, Jonathan?
Yeah, he would have been my first pick, too. I did my first draft and then realized I had forgotten him, and I probably blow on him. And so I agree kind of around where Jim's guesstimating where he ends up. I think the guy that I'm curious to see where he lands is Helio Ramos, the Giants' first round pick from last year, high schooler out of Puerto Rico, who I'll be the first to admit I do Puerto Rico for draft coverage. Area guys did not see him that good. He wasn't seen that well a lot. Leading into the draft, and I think that hurt his stock. But then he went out, and the Giants, who are always ones to sort of not necessarily go off the board, because taking him in the first round was not that big of a stretch later in the first round, but he was not necessarily he crept into that conversation late, and a lot of it had to do with the Giants' interest in him. He went in the Arizona League and hit .348 and slugged .645, stole 10 bases. I know it's only 138 at-bats, but it was such an exciting debut, and he followed it up with solid showing instructs. So I'm very excited to see what he does for an encore. He's going to be 18 for all of the 2018 season. He doesn't turn 19 until September. So it would be interesting to see, does he perform his way to full season ball right away? I'm going to say yes, and I'm curious to see how he does there. But I know I put him a square on my top 100. Mike Rosenbaum did as well. So I think he's going to land somewhere in the top 100 for sure.
Great stuff, guys. That list, that top 100, will be out later in the month of January. There'll be plenty of content coming from the Rookie Career Development Program on MLB Pipeline coming up next week when you guys are back after doing all these good interviews down there. So enjoy yourselves this weekend. You're out of the snow, so that is a bonus. And that'll do it for this edition of the Pipeline Podcast. For Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in.